Okay, Carcatol, you're
Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Kirk and I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. A preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. But we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you're new to AA or new to Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you've worked all 12 steps, as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. Quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will meticulously time. Then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be ensure your environment is and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. John has graciously asked Terry Ann to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You just gotta unmute yourself.
I'm new to this, so what do we do? Do we just read out the steps one by one?
Yes, ma'am.
So step one, we admit we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitting to God, to ourselves, and to other human beings the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take the personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. 11, saw through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us, the power to carry that out. And 12, having a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Great job, Corinne. Thank
Wow, that was
you,
hard.
Corinne.
It's my first go at doing this. So, yeah.
It was
Thanks.
perfect. Thank you. Today, we will hear a talk on steps 4 and 5. Please give a warm welcome to the man himself, Calvin S. from New Brunswick, New Jersey. Woo!
No doubt, no doubt. Thank you so much, Kurt. Thank you. You know, my name is Calvin and I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here. You know, it's good to be anywhere in your right mind somewhat. And, you know, I always came to this group back in the middle of the pandemic every day almost, because that's what I did. And I got so much and I got fed every time that I came. And I loved it. I never seen nobody do the breakout rooms like you guys do. And you still do. It's amazing to watch and amazing to come and to be a part of and to be asked to talk here. So, you know, and today I got to talk about, you know, step 4 and step 5. But, you know, I kind of like to start a little bit earlier in that, you know, if I could. Just want to take a look at the clock. And I like to talk about, you know, I always like to talk about the bedevilments a minute, you know, before I get to going up here. Because bedevilments really, really, you know, touch my soul. And they have touched my soul in a way that I don't want them to touch them no more if I don't have to. And the bedevilment said, talk about, do I have a hard time? Do I have trouble with emotional, controlling my emotional nature? Am I useful to other people? Am I prey to misery and depression? You know, and it keeps on going down. And that's on page 52 in our book, right? And it keeps talking about, let's talk about dead sober. That's the second step. It's talking about dead sober. I'm going through this hard time because I just stopped drinking and I ain't went no farther than the second step, right? And then 31 pages, we got just the opposite. You got the promises. And they talk about this freedom. I'm useful to people. Things have changed. And in the middle of that, what made that change happen? What made all of that clear away? Right now I'm in a, I've had a spiritual shift. What made that shift happen? And I always talk, and I know Lana's on, that's my wife, and she's on today. And you know, and I think about what happened to me, and she knows we live in a house that's 105 years old, built in 106 years old, actually. It was built in 1917, and it's an old brick house. It's poured block. It was like a bomb shelter. You couldn't blow this thing up, and the pipe that runs out to the street is probably gone. My main that runs to the sewer is gone. But it has formed its own pipe. And every now and again, a tree root grows through it. And when that tree root grows through it, it stops up and backs up in my house. And when it do, my house is full of poopy water. It gets my cellar dust. And until I get Roto-Rooter over there to run that snake down through that pipe and clear out them roots, and let that flow come back in. My house, I don't care how much clean water you pour upstairs, it's just going to turn into poopy water in the cellar. But once it's unclogged, it's unclogged. And that's what we're talking about today. How do I unclog myself so the sunlight of the spirit can come in? How do I unclog that? Because back to we the Gnostics says God's deep down in every man, woman, and child, covered up by the pomp of worship of other things. And I worship other things. And I believed in a lot of things that wasn't true. I made up my reality as I went along. I made up my truth, you know, and because I was never going to deal with guilt and shame. So I just dealt with, you know, just change the truth. You know, if I do something to you, I just change the truth. You know, and when we get up to this fourth step, and I made a decision. I made a decision in that third step to be launched. Launch means you launch missiles, right? You lose no more time. It ain't talking about I turn it, took it back, turn it, took it back. No, that's just living in recovery and working the rest of the steps. No, if I do and I follow this program, I go to meetings and I work these steps, I'm doing God's will. It's going to be mistakes made. That's just the humanness of me. But once I do the third step and I launch into that fourth step, like talking, something happens. That's the first for me, but the first spiritual shift, major shift that I had towards that new freedom they talk about. That new freedom. And you know, everybody talked about resentments. The person yesterday must have talked about resentments. And that's the number one offender, right? And then we get to fear and harms and sex. We have sex, fear, and harms. And I think about the fear that I came in. And I didn't even know I had fear because I covered it up with cockiness. They said, when fear makes you cocky, it's worse. And I covered it up with a lot of cockiness. If you see me on a person's face ready to fight or argue, I'm scared to death. I am scared to death. But you couldn't have told me that because I didn't understand it. You explained that to me here and through this process. I have seven children, and I've been married a couple times. If you live like I live, that's what you do. You get married a few times, right? And I got seven children, 11 grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. And they all know that I'm their grandfather, and they all know I'm their daddy, and they all got my last name. And all of them did well. My son went to the Air, my oldest boy went to the Air Force. Now he's over the major hospital down in Atlanta, Georgia. My daughter came in this program 10 years ago, and she wouldn't talk to me. And she came in, and I tried to straighten her, but she just wouldn't. From some things from the childhood, because me and her mother didn't make it, so she just wouldn't. But I always showed love. And then one day she called me and said, "Daddy," she said, "Daddy, I'm suffering from the disease of alcoholism." And she's now 10 years old. And this girl has made more money than anybody in our family. I know money ain't got nothing to do with the spirit, but it's nice to have as you're taking the journey. And I mean, this girl, you know, she's in the spirit. And then my daughter up under her has seen the worst of my addiction. And her mother died of breast cancer. And she's seen the worst of my addiction. She passed aggressive. She loved me. She's going to send me a present for my birthday. She's going to send me a present at Christmas. And she's going to always do me like that, but she's always going to make me feel the pain. And she's never going to do it with a curse word or disrespect. She's just going to do it. She got a way of doing that because she's real passive aggressive. And when she got all of them got degrees and went to school, all of them did well. And round to me and Lana's kid. Me and Lana got 3 kids. And all this kid, you know, she got a master's degree, and the kid under her need 20 more credits to get her degree. And I'm telling you this for a reason. Now I got down to my baby, my youngest. And he goes to jail. Now I'm telling you this A story. Look at what this A success story, right? You know what I mean? Look what I've done here. And my baby goes to jail. And I can't do nothing. I spent a lot of money on lawyers trying to get him. So because I can't stand. And I didn't do none of it for him because I'm selfish. And I just couldn't stand his consequence. His consequences wasn't good. But I'm going to talk about the fear of that. The night he got arrested, somebody called me. I think my son-in-law called me and said, "They arrested him, Paul." And I got down there and almost got killed that night. And I'm 30 years sober because they had my son in the back of that police car. And I had never seen my son. I had never gotten in trouble. He was 19, never had to go to school, nothing for him. And I was scared to death. And I started arguing with them cops, and they let me know, "You don't stop, this ain't going to turn out well." 30 years sober. Lana kept telling me, Lana was with me. She kept telling me, "Calvin, stop, stop, stop." I couldn't. My son yelled out of the back of that police car, "Daddy, stop." And I heard him. It's like he slapped me. And I stopped. And then we got him out. Then he had to go pay the piper. And when that happened, being involved in all these little groups out here, I knew that they were going to try to hurt my son in that jail. and I would go sit out in that jail parking lot. Or that I would be here sitting on the couch and wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and come downstairs. And I'd come downstairs and I'd sit on the couch by myself and I'll be scared to death. And I would start to pray. People say the opposite of faith, a fear is faith. I don't know, probably is. But I really believe that fear pushes me to the Creator. That's what happens to me. It pushes me to the solution. It will push me because I won't move. I'll get stuck in my own want to fix it, my head knowledge, and stuff like that. And I'm saying that for a reason, just to talk about fear, how I feel overwhelmed, you know, and how that God brought me through, because God comes through the wounds. He comes through the wounds. That I truthfully believe that. He comes through the cracks. And now we want to talk a little bit about the sex thing, what I'm here to talk about today, too. And see, I lived like a pirate when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had no moral compass. And if you live like I live with no moral compass, and I learned about sex on the street at 13 years old, and I bought into adult marriages, and it failed because I had no adult explaining to me what I should be doing or how I should be. Now, my parents stayed together, but I just knew that it wasn't what I wanted to do, you know, like they did it, you know. And but anyway, you know, I never was faithful to them. I'd be married and just go do whatever I wanted to do, you know, and that's how I lived. And when you do that, you end up married a few times. Mm. But what happened with me in that sex area? And it ain't about the physical act of sex as much as about the manipulation of it. It's how do I manipulate? How do I scheme? How do I twist the truth to get my way? How do I use my selfishness to do what I do? And I don't care what it costs you, as long as I get what I need. That's what they're talking about. How do I stop that? How do that come to an end? Because to live a life, that ain't gonna work if I keep doing that. I didn't know that at the time, you know? And what happened is, me and my midwife broke up. We broke. I didn't remember my first wife. That was like, oh God, that was like World War III. Because we was kids when we met. Oh, and my midwife, and we had broke up. Same thing happened. You do the same thing, you get the same results. And I was getting the same results as I did the first time because I didn't do no change. I went farther in with the scheming and manipulating. And these girls loved me. They cared for me. And but they couldn't stay with me for so long. Because of all the way I lived my life like a pirate. And anyway, that I've seen an old girl at the coffee pot. I mean, I'm broke up and I'm really going to meetings and I'm doing what I'm trying to do, but I'm just fellowshipping. I ain't really worked no steps or nothing. I'm 37. I turned last month 37 years sober. Right? But that was about 2 years sober, a year and a half, 2 years sober. And I ain't got no moral compass. And so I met an old girl at the coffee bar. And she kind of liked me and I kind of liked her. And, I'm broke up from my wife and she's out there living by herself. I'm living by myself. So me and this girl kind of got together. And what happened was, as we got together, she got pregnant. Now, that changed the whole dynamics of that situation. Now, I'm still married, and she's pregnant. Mm. And the coward that I am, I would take my daughter out on Saturdays, and I would tell my daughter that it was, I guess, 12 years old, 11 years, 12 years old. She was 8 years when I got sober, 8 years old. So she was probably about 11 or 12. And I told her, you're going to have a little brother or sister. Mm-hmm. I told my daughter, when we was out at the lake, you know what I mean? We had lunch. Because I ain't going to tell her mother that. You know what I mean? Because I'm a coward. And her mother hunted me down like I was on the FBI list. But she went home and told her mama. Her mama chased me down like I was the most wanted. And she found me. You know, and she started telling me, she said, you've been in that program 2-3 years, and I'm the only time I'm gonna use a bad word. She said, and you still a rotten little son of a bitch. That's what she said. I'm just saying that's what she said. I didn't say that. That's what she said. And for some reason, I could put up a shield, I could twist people and spin them another way, but I couldn't no more. I couldn't do it no more. For some reason, she went straight through my shield because I was really good at reflecting, changing the truth. I could almost make you like act like you was at fault, and you almost believe it. That's how I had honed that skill. But for some reason, this program had took my shield away. And that girl was hitting me with it and sticking me and hitting me. And I'm thinking, and I knew I just broke down and started crying. I asked God, if you let me live right one more time. One more time. And that's been 30-something years ago. And I've been faithful in a relationship for 30-something years. But if it wasn't for the pain of me and you guys showing me that look what your life looks like and working these steps and going through. And my God, I had no idea. But on the flip side of that, you know, and to watch the healing take place, you know, like I said, it's not about the physical act of sex. It's all the things that we do, all the manipulation, all the mistruths, all of just the selfishness. That's what we're talking about here. The dishonesty. That's what it talks about in that step. You know? That's what we're talking about here. And without God's help, it's not coming in. And that's where it came to the fifth step. Because the first thing I used to blame my first wife. And then somebody sat me back and we went through it. And we did a fifth step. And I got a chance to see for the first time that I got the ball the rolling every time. Now that's awakening. It was me. I got that ball to roll. But before I told so many lies, I couldn't, when the book talked about we can't distinguish the truth from the false, absolutely. I could not ever come up on the truth by myself. And for the first time, I started seeing the truth of my life and how I showed up in people's lives and how many people I've hurt and damaged through my behavior. And I had a chance to go back to my first wife and straighten that out. I had a chance to talk to Kathy before she went to the other world. And she said, Calvin, when I remember I went up to the hospital, she was not in a good place. And she told me, she said, Calvin, I made amends to her. She said, Calvin, you're not the guy you used to be. Because she had seen the transformation. She had seen the transformation. I don't step on somebody else's toes upon moving on up, but she seen the transformation in me. And when she did pass, I didn't feel all that guilt and shame. And I made some serious mistakes there. I did a lot of damage. And I want to bring it up to now, and this is a part of all of that. My daughter now, she was 8 years old when I got sober. She's 45. And she lives in Atlanta, Georgia. She's an accountant. Girl has done very well for herself. No children. Her and her husband married, you know, been together for almost 15 or 16 years, and they've done well. And she's the one that will make me feel the pain. And she always do. And my sister died about a month ago. So I had to go to Atlanta. And I drove there. I'm 70 years old. I drove there by myself. 1,800, 900 miles by myself. And I get there. But the week before I get there, how God set the path. Just like Bill W. when he was going to Ohio. God sent, Lois told him something about, well, you still sober, dude. No, the rest of them didn't get sober, but you're sober. And then he went sober. He said, don't tell him hot flash. He told him, he said, go there and tell him about your experience with drinking, right? Well, he wasn't telling them when he go, but Bill used every one of them tools when he went to Ohio and everything failed. It's amazing how God set that path up before you even get to it. And he always does. And he set my path before I went down there with my daughter because we had this hit and miss relationship. We got on the phone a week before that. And I didn't even know my sister was on that. A week before that. And we talked from 8:30 that night to 4:30 in the morning. We cried. We laughed. We went in it. She got a chance to tell me what she thought. She got a chance to say, she told me some things that I don't even remember. But I told her, I said, one thing about all of that, kid, is this. I am sorry if I done that. And I promise you it will never be repeated ever again. That's a problem. And she knew that was true. But she got a chance to vent everything that was in her. And she was healing. And one thing we did, usually when we get to that sticky point, we'll get off the phone. We'll stop talking to each other. She didn't get off the phone, and I didn't get off the phone. And we stayed there and worked it out. And when we got off that phone, when I got down, it was the best. She didn't want to leave me. That's the healing of this step, the step five, and all the rest of the steps. The healing that comes from Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, Daddy, I'm coming Sunday morning. I'm leaving. She said, I'm going to take you to dinner, take you out for breakfast. We got to that parking lot. We never got out the car. We sat in that parking lot and just talked again. And she told me, I don't have a middle name. And I don't know that. I don't think about that at all. I have no middle name, right? And she said, Daddy. She says, we gave you a middle name. You don't know what our family is. And I'm thinking, all these little intimate things I would have never knew. And said, we call you Fred. Fred Flintstone kind of thing, right? And she said, I use it for a lot of my codes because nobody knows because you don't have a middle name. But, I mean, she had a chance to talk to her dad on a level that we had never, ever talked before. And that's what this program, I'm going to say this one thing, and I'm going to wrap this thing up. In December, I turned 70 years old. I ain't never really had a surprise birthday party in my life. Never. Atlanta gave me a surprise birthday party. And they treated me really well. They got me to this spot. When I walked through there, all my friends, I sponsor a guy that's a priest. He was there. I sponsor all these. And my daughter flew, and my son, oldest son, that you wouldn't believe what I had done to his mama in front of him. They flew up that morning to just be there for my party and flew back the next morning. Just to be with me. Just to be with me. And that's the healing. And that's the process. And a whole lot of, and today, because of the fourth, the fifth step, and the rest of the step, I can sit home at peace and my mind ain't racing around. I'm at peace most of the time. And it's more than gold. It's the most greatest gift that I have ever been given. It's to have an open heart and a still mind. There is no greater gift. There is no greater gift. And I'm just so grateful that you guys had me. Man, y'all guys gonna meet me. Me and my wife today, we road dogs, man. We road dogs. And I watch her work with other women, I work with other guys, and our life works together. It works. And we're honest with each other as we can be. When my son got out of that prison, he got out of that jail. We went and got him. And he on his grind. He had the same kind of bottom I did. Because he had some. He came from somewhere. I ain't trying to say no people don't come from there. But he knew when he's sitting up there looking at that ceiling in that little 6x20 cell or whatever he in. And he knew all the things he had gave up. And all he wanted was another chance at this life. And he wasn't just talking that. 8 minutes. When he got out. And when I was, I'm going to say this part. When he was a kid, I always prayed. I would be in my bedroom, I'd get down on my knees and I pray. I don't get down there now, that now. I still pray, but not on my knees because I might not get up. But I get down there on my knees and pray. And my son would get down there on his knees with me and pray. He's 4 or 5 years old. And he would get down and go see a daddy praying. When we went and got him from that prison that day, me and Lana, a few months back, the parole officer, we had taken the parole, and the parole officer wanted to meet us because they couldn't believe that he got out of jail and he talked like this because they meet a lot of people who can't. And when he walked in there, he was being tough. And once he seen that we were the real deal, me and Lana, He calmed down and started making things happen because he wanted to see. Because we are the power of example. When I got out of that car, my shoe was untied. My son got down on his knees like he was a kid and tied my shoe. Might not meant to a lot of people, but it meant a lot to me. I knew my son was still there. Hey, I want to let you thank you guys for letting me give you a talk today. And I'm done. Thank you.